Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 80 of Season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to finish up the week and hopefully digest all of that turkey from yesterday is Jim O'Kane of the Apollo 13 Minute of a whole bunch of different shows, October Sky Minute, Airport Minute, the Andromeda Strain Minute. You probably know better than I do all the different ones.
Rocketeer Minute too. There we go. Thanks, Robert.
There you go.
No problem.
And the upcoming Captain America Minute, which we'll start on Monday. You know, here we go. So welcome.
That's right. Thanks for having me. I'm just it's Black Friday, so I've got this 80-inch flat screen TV just picked up this morning at Best Buy. So I've got to go hang this on the wall. Just got to find a big enough wall for it so I can watch all these movies. Yeah.
Wait,
make sure the carriage bolts are big.
Did you drink the serum yet, or you're still waiting for it? You know, in order to give you the super strength.
Yeah, that's the thing. I need to get that big machine that that Howard Stark built, but it's not in the cards. But fortunately, I've got the kids and the grandkids here to help me load the thing up on the wall. So I think we should have enough hands to the till. So we'll get that up. But first, I got to do this show first. Let's talk about Pelham 123 first.
All right, excellent. So minute 80 begins with Garber getting very curious and ends with the cops getting set up on the platform. So we ended things yesterday with Garber talking to Rico, and he started saying, "Listen, Rico, I don't care." And he got cut off. And today he finishes that sentence by saying, "What those clowns said. I want men on every..." And then he like loses his train of thought, or you see the light bulb go over his head as he's saying that. And then he says to Rico, "Wait a minute, hold on a second." And then he switches, like he just cuts off Rico and switches to talk to Daniels. He goes, "Inspector Daniels, I think we ought to have officers on every platform from 14th Street to South Ferry." And Daniels responds and goes, "That's a good idea, Lieutenant. Will do. And then he says, "I'll come up to 17th Street and join you." So what's very interesting here is, you know, you'd think that Garber would have said something that would have changed his thought pattern, because he just mentions clowns. You know, it's like, yeah, that's something that doesn't sound as if there's any connective tissue there. You know, if he would have said something like, I don't know if I don't care about what these hijackers said. I mean, obviously he needs some sort of derogatory term to, you know, to add in a little bit of humor here by saying it's clowns. But I don't know. It just, you know, like it's funny that he calls them clowns in the first place. But you know, cause he's basically saying at this point, you know, they don't want anybody there, but we got to make sure that there are people there. But I don't really know how that's something that's going to be beneficial at this point, because it's taking a big risk.
Yeah, they could be shooting people as an example. You know, it's like they know that they are killers, so you want to play it. I think you'd want to play it extremely safe.
Exactly, which is why it, you know, obviously, I mean, yesterday Garber talked about the fact that he knows something's going on. He doesn't know what's going on, but something's going on. And neither he nor Rico has any idea what's really going on there. We barely know what's going on, you know, if this is a first watch. You know, you see these guys laying pipe. That's all you see. You know, maybe they're going to be bursting a water main. I don't know what they're going to be doing. You know, it doesn't really, yeah. You know, we don't know. But for him to then say, okay, yeah, let's put men back on the platforms, and to Daniels agrees with him also right away, as opposed to Daniels saying, "Well, wait a second, didn't we agree that we weren't going to be doing that?" You know, it's like where's this coming from?
We just had a big shoot 'em up a little while ago in the, you know, further up the line, so it's like, do you really want to antagonize them?
Right. Yeah, no, I don't get it. Don't get it. And then and it's funny also that he says I'm gonna come up to 17th Street because we don't know where he is. We don't know where the command center is, but you know he must be downtown from 17th Street, even though he's gonna get there pretty quick. So he can't be that far away
Yeah.
he's not gonna be taking the train. That's for sure.
Yeah,
But
no, it's everything's backed up to the Bronx, so it's just yeah.
that's right. So yeah, I don't know.
I
It's
do we know where the subway control center is?
no.
I mean, and
No. I looked it up at the beginning of the season, and the place where it was at I think it was at 1PP. But 1PP has changed. They moved 1PP, I think, in 74. So I wasn't 100% clear where they are at that point. It could go either way.
yeah. It's yeah, it's a mystery. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess it's where it needed to be. I'm sure in the book it's probably a little bit more accurate of all these things of how they're going. And I'm sure the author probably paced it out to figure out where it is. So I don't think he's too far away from where he needs to be for this thing. But you know, it's movie time. Although it's kind of odd because you know, you were talking about in previous minutes about how the minutes are exactly right and it's happening in real time.
Oh, it's pretty
So
close. It's pretty
I guess
close.
he's not too,
This
yeah,
isn't
he's not too
specifically
far from
real.
Union
Yeah.
Square, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I
And
would imagine, I mean, at the if the subways are down, the buses would be packed. That's what I was thinking. It's
that's right.
our assumption is everything below Midtown is blocked because there's no way around these things unless they're going, I mean, they're going on the east side, but really everything that's coming on the where the 6 train is gone. All the IND line is not unavailable today.
Right. Exactly. It's I mean, last week there was the whole altercation between Garber and Frank, where Frank w did mention, okay, tell him to take a bus or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And then Garber continues talking to Rico, and he goes, "Rico, how you coming along with that list of motormen?" He goes, "They're working on it. I told them to rush it through." The way that Rico says it doesn't sound very enthusiastic. You'd think we're in the middle of this crisis of this hostage situation. You'd think that he would have, told them this is top priority. Take care of this. Drop everything you're doing. We need to find the motorman right now. But it's not really. It doesn't sound as if it's that important. By the way that Rico responds, he's like, "Yeah, I told him to rush it, but whenever they rush it, they rush it."
Yeah, it's very puzzling.
And then he says, "Well, come up here, will you? And take over the radio for me. But don't tell them the track's clear until you hear from me. I don't want them starting again until I get there." He goes, "Will do, Z." Now we know already that they're in the same building. So, that's already a start. Because Garber was giving the tour, I think that's also one of the reasons why they had us watch Garber give the tour to the Japanese businessmen. To give us a little bit of the geography that we know that they're all in the same place. So I like the way they do that.
Yeah.
And I love how Rico always calls him Z. Rico, he goes, "We'll do Z."
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah, obviously, they've been working together for a long time, and you know, it's very casual with them. Even in the middle of a dire situation, it's like, oh, it's another one of those days. You know, they've had to deal with other things. I mean, everything from all this mayhem to Japanese tourists to whatever. It's just more things to do.
Right.
Do you think you could get a TV show out of this? I guess there's not that many things. I mean, how do you top hijacking a train? I don't know what they could do with day-to-day stuff.
Are you talking about like a procedural with with Garber and Petroni?
Transit Authority Police or something that, you know, how do you, what
Well,
how many Law
you
and
can have an
Order episodes
episode.
can you get out of the subway?
That's right. Well, you probably could because you get a bomb scare where you find out it's only a cantaloupe. So
Yeah.
it's possible.
Yeah, or like the I don't know, the Barnum and Bailey train broke down in Penn Station and released wild animals, and there's some of them are running down the subway, and there's a tiger at, the 34th Street station, and they got to figure out how to get the tiger out in the dark. So
Okay,
you could, yeah, I'm sure there's. Go
but the best
ahead.
way to look at it is if you go back to I think it was the third week of this season, where Garber gives a list off, he lists off to the Japanese tourists, everything that they do, and he
Yeah.
so that would in some ways tell us what it is that I think they could get a TV show. They might even be able to get a sitcom out of it. I don't even know if it needs to be a procedural.
Yeah. Yeah, some there's possibilities. I mean, I yeah, it, the hands of a good writer and and a director like Joe Sargent, who's also a writer, you could probably come up with at least 8 to 8 or 10 episodes for the first season. I'm sorry, and the other thing is we haven't seen any of their families. We haven't seen, it's like does he have a wife? Does he have an ex? They have, are there kids? Is there one of them going to be a does he have a kid who's a rookie patrol officer and he's got to worry about, other people treating him right? And there's a whole bunch of basically everything that you did in Barney Miller. And there's going to be people they bring in that, well, who's this guy? Well, see, what do you think about this guy? And it's some guy that thinks that the world's going to end because he's been reading tea leaves or something like that, and they could have like a detention area where they talk to these guys and have chats. So yeah, you could probably do like a Barney Miller variant with the Transit Authority police.
Right. I mean, again, if you go back to minute 13 of this season, so the line is that Garber says the average TA policeman deals with such crimes as robbery, assault, murder, drunkenness, illness, vandalism, mishigas, abusiveness, sexual molestation, exhibitionism. So there's enough there for at
Yeah,
least one season.
that sounds like the first season. Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do for Michigas, but whatever. That's yeah, because you don't have Walter, you don't have Walter Matthau to deal with that one. But
Yeah. Well, if I yeah. I don't know who would be the modern Walter Matthau. What deadpan guy can you think of that would be an act if they ever, God forbid, remade Pelham 123 yet again,
well, definitely not
who would you
Denzel.
cast? Yeah.
That's a
Yeah, I don't think he'd
great
use the phrase
choice.
Michigas.
That's a great question. Let's see, who is
A bit
again,
grizzled.
if it was the 80s or maybe even early 90s, I might have said Billy Crystal, maybe.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
But obviously not now. Billy Crystal can't do that anymore. That's out
No.
of his reach.
Tommy Lee's too old.
No, I think it
You
needs to be
need somebody deadpan.
a comedic actor who's able to also
Yeah.
do drama. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Someone like Tom Hanks, but Tom Hanks wouldn't fit here, because he's
No. He's no. It's not the right. You need somebody from New York. You need a New Yorker.
right. That's true also.
I'm sure the listeners are going, what about this guy? But,
That's right.
I'm sure
Send in
there are people out
your
there. And
suggestions. We'd love to hear your
yes.
suggestions.
I don't know. Maybe somebody from The Hangover, and one of the guys in The Hangover might be able to do it.
Not Zach. I don't think so. Not Zach, Galif, whatever his last
No,
name is.
no. What about whatchamacallit, Ant-Man?
Oh, Paul Rudd. That might actually be not
Paul
a.
Rudd.
Yeah, I think you got that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Paul Rudd
Yeah,
would be
Paul
good.
Rudd. I could see it. He's not too Steve Guttenberg-y for it. He can still do like straight guy role. He doesn't seem he's comedic without being comedic. He can just play it very straight and be funny at it. But yeah, I could see Paul Rudd doing this. And they like I don't know how to describe this. People didn't have to be pretty back then.
Right.
It's like you could have the Dick O'Neills and the Walter Matthaus because you look at their faces and Rodney Dangerfield's career
That's
is
right.
built on not looking great. So, but there aren't that many like I think that day has passed. People looking for beautiful people to do the roles, but I think
Right.
Paul Rudd would I think be about the best character. Although I'm sure, and I do look forward to the listeners coming up with better casting choices on all of this.
Yeah.
Intriguing. Wow. Well, let's see what happens. That'll
Right.
be fun.
Okay. Right. So at this point the shot goes back to the train itself, and we see Mr. Green struggling a little bit. He like grunts a little bit as he's putting whatever pipes together that he's supposed to be putting together. We're still not really sure what he's doing, but Martin Balsam is doing a nice job of making us believe that he's really working hard with whatever it is that he's doing there.
Yeah. And you gotta admire his carpentry skills in making that pipe holder for the briefcase. That's right up there with Van Heflin in my favorite movie, Airport, in building his little bomb in the briefcase. But yeah, you have to admire all the craftsmanship of these gizmos that they're bringing on different vehicles.
That's true. And after we see him struggling a little bit, we're back in Manhattan on uptown upside, watching a police van go by, watching a police car go by. Did you notice that there's a discount furniture store behind them there?
Yes, JGE Electronics, which I mean that spelled out the 70s for New York television back then with Jerry Rosenberg was the J in JGE and was quite the pitch man. Although I didn't know if you were, is that's where you're going with that.
Well, it was a question that I asked, but I the truth is I couldn't find anything up in it. No, I couldn't find anything
Oh,
in
if
it.
you
There is
I would
KG Electronics,
strongly
but
Yeah, JGE Electronics, which was it started out as Jamaica Gas and Electric, but they were very popular in the 70s throughout the tri-state area for their commercials. There was a fellow, the guy that ran the J in JGE was a fellow named Jerry Rosenberg, and he had these he was this rather rotund fellow who had a shirt that was a little too short, and he'd talk about the different things. He also ran a It was similar to a Sam's Club or things. You had to join and get a membership. You had to be either a union member, a teacher, a first responder to get. It was kind of like a credit union. You had to qualify to be part of his club. And once you got a card to buy stuff at JGE, he had incredibly cheap doorbuster prices on electronics like Sony Betamaxes and things like that back in the day. And he used to have these. He had these commercials that plastered the local New York channels, where there was an off-screen fellow saying, "Hey Jerry, what's the story?" And he'd said, "Well, we have," he'd name off all these different. We have Sony, we have JVC, we have Marantz, all these different stereos and things that he sells. And the off-screen voice would keep saying, "Yeah, but Jerry, what's the story?" And he'd say, "The story is you go down to Jamaica Bay in Queens, or you go to our place in Long Island, or you go to Manhattan, Midtown, or you go to," and he'd name off all the different stores that he has. And so at the end, the off-screen guy would say, "So that's the story, Jerry?" And Jerry would lean back with his big belly sticking out from underneath the shirt, going, "That's the story." And I can't tell you how often those commercials work 24/7 on local New York.
That
So seeing
it does
JGE
ring a
again.
bell. It does ring a bell. with the whole thing. So I looked up who Jerry Rosenberg is. His name was Gerald Rosenberg. He was born in 1934. According to what I found on the internet, he is still around. He's still alive, so he must be 91 if that's the
case.
He
must be 100. Oh, no, yeah.
He was born in 34.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. So he was an American television direct response advertisement salesperson, most notable for promoting local businesses. His distinctive balding scalp, rotund body, thick Brooklyn accent, and impassioned sales pitches made him a recognized television presence in the U.S., primarily in the New York metropolitan area. He was the co-owner of JGE, Jamaica Gas and Electric Appliances, a 40-store appliance chain, along with his brother, Charlie. They started their store in Bayside, Queens, and they used to call it the $100 million empire. They owned one store, and the other 30 were all licensed.
So franchising, and, yeah.
Yeah, franchising. So they began in 1971 with him starting in advertisements for JGE with the line, as you said, "What's the story, Jerry?" and ended with another off-screen line, "So that's the story, Jerry," to which he would reply in his trademark accent, "That's the story." He did the business with his brother, Charles. There was a New York Times article in 1974 that talked about the fact that they were the first appliance merchants to have made the media the message. And
yeah, he was a character. He was very much like West Coast car dealers. He was always on. You knew who Jerry was. Everybody in the New York metropolitan area knew who Jerry was.
That's right. So in 1971, their sales were at $2 million. And in 1974, due to all the media advertisements they did, it ballooned to $50 million of sales.
Wow.
Just within 3 years. Then he started advertising for other stores, for jewelry stores, furniture retailers, discotheques, by using the same style that he used for his, and also giving, as you said, the discounts for union members, stuff like that. In December of 74, the New York City actually sued him and his brother in the New York Supreme Court. They wanted $250,000 in restitution for victimized customers claiming deceptive advertising because they lured customers into leaving large deposits for furniture and appliances that would arrive months later damaged. The city had received at least 300 consumer complaints, and they obviously denied the charges. They actually countersued the city for libel, abuse, and conspiracy. But by 1977, the company itself was defunct. He actually even put an ad in the Wall Street Journal trying to find a new job, and he wrote, "Ready for a new challenge, seeking a position in sales, merchandising, advertising, or public relations."
Wow.
So, yeah, that's Jerry Rosenberg for you.
Yeah, he was. He and Crazy Eddie were the two hucksters of my childhood.
Yes. Yes, I'm very familiar with Crazy Eddie. So we see a police van and a police car slowly driving through the city past where they're going. And at this point, we actually get another shot of S. Klein. And it's very interesting what it says there, because it says coats, suits, dresses, millinery. Okay, now I'm sure you know what millinery is. I didn't know. I had to look it up. What is millinery?
Isn't it like just any kind of hats?
That's or, right. Hats
like,
or headwear.
Like things you wear, things above your neck, like you wear cowls or hats or.
That's right.
Yeah, it's more than just hats.
It's the idea of hat making or making things for your head, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Basically things for your head, but it's like. I know there's a difference between haberdashery there's a difference between hattery and millinery. Does millinery apply to women's hats, or is it for men as well?
It's mainly women's hats, but it's also men's hats.
Okay, it does apply to men's hats. I didn't know.
Yeah, someone who works in this type of trade is known as a milliner, or a hatter, maybe a mad hatter.
Okay.
Could be.
Yeah, mad milliner.
That's right. We get a quick shot of a whole bunch of police in what looks like riot gear running down into the subway itself, and then we get shot inside the subway of them, a whole bunch of cops, both in regular uniforms and these guys who look like they're in riot gear, going through. What's funny is some of them actually go through like a gate, and a few of the others just jump over the turnstiles.
Oh yeah,
maybe just to show that they can. And then we see them setting up on the platform of the station. You know, they're following the orders of being at the 18th Street station.
I do have if we could go back to S. Klein, I just wanted to point out something in that moment for people looking at it, where you're looking at Union Square. If you'll notice, across the street from S. Klein is where the IRT subway was. Mm-hmm. Before the IRT was underground, 6th Avenue, that used to be an elevated line. Now, understand, when you're on an elevated train, you're up above the street. If you look at the older buildings around Union Square, there is a second floor above the stores where there are gigantic picture windows. And what those picture windows are, that's a remnant of when the elevated trains would go by, the way that stores in that area in Lower Manhattan sold their goods along 6th Avenue was they built all their display windows on the second floor rather than on the first floor. And even though the elevated trains are gone, the glass, that second floor of glass, the display windows are still there. So it explains, why are there those big windows on the second floor instead of on the first? That's what they were there for. They're there to sell for trains that no longer exist or that have gone underground.
And it makes sense. That's a great way to advertise, because nowadays everyone, is on their phone when they're, in a subway or whatever. They're not going to be looking out the window. But back then, you had nothing better.
Exactly. Yeah. So you just stare out and go, "Hey, I gotta get off at the 23rd Street, or I get off at Union Square and go to that place where I saw all those beautiful hats at the S. Klein Milliners."
That's right. So there's no way of knowing that. And you do see a big sign there that says "All Beef Frankfurters, Cold Drinks." And there's something that says Harry something that gets cut off.
Harry.
Can't really tell what it says.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to figure out what that is. But like you said, there's a lot of spectators just standing around watching.
Yeah.
My assumption is that most of these people were saying, "Oh, they're shooting a movie here. Let's just stand around and watch." As long as you're quiet, you can sit, stand and watch. No problem. that would be my guess.
Yeah, and back in, New York was such a busy place in the 70s for filming. They were very amenable to shutting down streets. And I remember when Kramer versus Kramer was getting shot, most of
that was 5 years
the
later.
Upper East. Yeah, but I mean, all through the 70s and 80s, in the early part of the 80s, it was very pro-filming. And I just happen to remember when Kramer versus Kramer was being shot, most of the Upper East Side was closed down for weeks so that Dustin Hoffman could run around on the streets carrying a little boy to the hospital. King Kong was being made in 76 down by the World Trade Center, they had that was very difficult because they were shutting off a lot of stuff around Wall Street so they could film. They could get ready for the filming that they were doing at night. And it was very difficult to get around in Lower Manhattan during the King Kong shooting.
It makes sense.
It's but of course, you get all these free extras, just a lot, people that want to be that want to watch them make a movie. Everybody stand here and I'll take your picture. It's fine. I don't know if they had to get all these people to sign releases, but I guess the actors that are in costume, like the police officers there. I don't think the New York Police Department offered letting them. I mean, those are camera cars. Those are film cars, not actual New York police cars.
Right.
But maybe you could, pay the police that are there for crowd control to wear the uniform that day. I don't know.
Anything's possible.
But yeah, this is the again, this is all very nostalgic.
Nostalgia is good, isn't it?
I don't think I could Yeah, I don't think I could clear those you were saying earlier about
The turnstiles.
the SWAT team that was jumping over the turnstiles. No, my knees hurt just watching that
Yeah,
scene.
seriously. Well, they do have a pillar perfectly placed that you can't tell. You don't see the turnstiles themselves. You know, the metal, there
That's true,
could be
yeah.
nothing in between. They're just, you know.
That's always possible. It's like, yeah, just look like you're jumping over something.
That's right. Who knows? But people are going to have to wait until Monday to find out what the job is that these guys are being given.
Yeah.
So, all right. Every Friday we have a segment called Fun City Friday, where my guests will have to give their top five movies that somehow feature New York City in them. Now, I'm assuming you knew that Fun City is one of New York's various nicknames, correct?
Yes. And I think it became ironic. Mayor Lindsay called it Fun City as a pro tourist thing. But I think it became part of an ironic name for the, oh, you're going to Fun City today. So
Exactly.
it's but I think New
That's more like
Yorkers
an
take it to
amusement
heart. They like.
park.
Yeah, you can make fun of your city if that's your city. So I think it's
That's
okay
right.
to call it Fun City and mean it sardonically. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, there's so many things. You know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, I think, as somebody famous said.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you asked for five of these. As I mentioned what you had asked for Friday, my wife started listing off a bunch of her favorites, none of which matched mine. I think
Do
Kramer
you
versus
want to give
Kramer
me
is
her
one that she
five
had mentioned.
also?
It's like, oh, I kind of remember what some of them were. She had just started rattling them off, and I said, I've got my own, so let me. But I think she had mentioned not On the Town, the other one. What On the Town was she had mentioned Kramer versus Kramer, the Exodus th not the Exorcist 3, which was set in New York. I forgot about that. Men in Black, and gosh, she had mentioned a musical besides On the Town, and I can't remember which one it was. Let me just ask her. Oh no, she's not here at the moment. She went outside. I forgot that she's outside walking the dog, so the dog doesn't bark. There was another musical that she had mentioned with of course, Guys and Dolls. That was the one that she brought up, and I was like, that's a great Manhattan, even Midtown based one. But most of mine, with the exception of one, well, no, I'm sorry, there's two comedies and three action adventures. The first one that I came up with, which is filmed around the same time as this, is Robert Redford movie, 3 Days of the Condor. I love that film. It shows a lot of both Upper East Side New York, as well as the World Trade Center, where Cliff Robertson and the CIA are located in the movie. Great scene. Very, again, set in the winter, so it has that same cold feel of Manhattan. The next one I thought of was the one I always think of an ultimate New York movie is Shaft. I like the idea that Gordon Parks didn't really have permission to film, and he did it anyway in New York. Richard Roundtree watching Richard Roundtree walking around in traffic, and Gordon Parks just surreptitiously filming him with an Aeroflex camera from a rented office building is great. It feels very guerrilla filming, and it really it's a 1971 film that feels very 1971. So you get a good gritty city feel, and it's, I mean, Times Square, and you don't have a permit. That's the best thing. What an opener. Another one, one of my favorite sequels, the sequel to The French Connection, the movie The Seven Ups, possibly the greatest car chase scene, and I would put it up against Bullet. I know they were designed by the same stunt team, but watching those cars leaping off of Lenox Hill in, you know, all filmed at dawn on a Sunday, so there was no traffic around. And eventually winding up on the Palisades Parkway, somehow getting across the river. I don't know how they did it, but they managed to film on both sides of the Hudson and still make it seem like it worked. Great film. If you haven't seen the Seven Ups, don't miss the middle 30 minutes are the very best part of that. Getting away from action adventure movies, I love the mythical idea of how New York looks, and one of the ones that captures that really great way is the homage to a 60s Doris Day Rock Hudson movies, the film Down with Love with Ewan McGregor and Renee Zellweger. It has this crazy idea that it's that same idea that is promoted in Friends, that people who make almost no money can afford a gigantic apartment in Midtown Manhattan that has views of the somehow has views of the UN, the Chrysler Building, and the Empire State Building and the Statue of Liberty all out your back window.
Well, of
Uh,
course,
it's
come on.
it's such a great it's such a great take on those 50s, 60s romance films. Very funny comedy, well casted and well written. And I think Ewan McGregor doesn't get enough comedy roles. That's a great one for him. Number one is a movie directed by George Seton that hardly anybody's ever seen. I love this film. It's got George Peppard, it's got Mary Tyler Moore, and it's about a plague that hits New York, but it's a comedy.
Oh,
And
you and I talked
this
about
is from
this.
the 19
We
yes,
talked about this. Have you just seen it?
1968. It's a yeah. It's such a great film, and I can't recommend it enough. It's called What's So Bad About Feeling Good? A toucan arrives in New York and spreads this virus that makes people happy. And it turns out to be an economic disaster for New York because people stop going to bars, they stop smoking cigarettes and buying liquor. They're all happy. They don't need to go see their therapist anymore. They're just having a good time. And it turns out that not everybody gets sick, but the effect is if you have a lot of people that you live around that are having a good time, you start feeling better too. And it's a great message about, gee, maybe you should just, you know, change your attitude. But that is my favorite New York film. It's set in the village. It's late 60s, and it feels it. It has the same love of New York that I'd say a movie like The Producers has. That New York is a character in itself there. It brings out these different people. You're in the village, you're uptown. It's very funny, it's very sweet. And if you want a feel good movie, What's So Bad About Feeling Good is a great feel good movie. So those are my five New York ones, plus a couple from my wife.
Oh, wow, that's great. Thank you very much for that list. And now we will play for the final time this week. Name that remake. Let's see what you're gonna get. And around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, so this is a movie that originally came out in 1961. Okay, and it was remade twice, once in 1964 and once in 1996. Okay, and
Six.
the story is one that's been used many other times in many other type of media, I guess you can say. It's basically about a man shows up in a town with two rival gangs and ends up playing them against each other.
Town with two rival gangs.
The original movie is not an English language movie, and then both of the ones from
Oh,
64 and
okay.
96 are.
1964 and 1996.
96. The 96 version of this movie is with Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis, 1996 film. Wow. This might be beyond my ken. And there was a 1964 English language movie,
English
and then a
language movie,
1990s.
which was a Western. How's that? The 96 version is a gangster movie, the
Oh,
64
was
version
it
of it.
Okay, I was gonna say OK Corral. But that's not then. That wasn't. Oh wait. Crap, what is that one? I'm gonna have to pass on this one. I don't think I can break it. I'm sorry. He didn't remake like Fistful of Dollars or something, right? Or did he?
That is the answer. The original is Yojimbo.
It is?
Yeah, the original is Yojimbo with
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was
from
trying to think. I was
Kurosawa.
thinking the only Western I could think of were spaghetti Westerns, and I was going Fistful of Dollars with two gangs.
That's what, and that's the
So,
answer.
or is it?
It's a fistful of dollars,
Oh,
and then
they remade a Fistful of Dollars?
yes, and the fistful of
Wow.
dollars was a remake.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's a remake of Yojimbo. That makes sense. Yeah,
Exactly.
but in 1996 they remade it with Bruce Willis.
Yes, and
I didn't know that.
it's called Last Man Standing.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that one. That's a remake of Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
Okay, I did not know
Yeah.
that.
Again, it's not that great.
Yeah, I
But
know. I gotta watch more movies. But I was trying to figure. The only way I could figure it out was you said two rival gangs, and the guy's trying to get them to both fight. So that was Fistful of Dollars. But okay, wow. There's another. I'm gonna write that down. Last Man Standing. That's another one I gotta rewatch for the first time. Standing. Okay,
exactly.
I will check that out.
All
Is
right.
it worth watching? Let me ask you that first.
No, it is not. I mean,
Oh, okay.
it has, well, it has Bruce Dern in it, okay,
Oh.
and it also has Christopher Walken.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, but again, it's not a great movie, but it's fun. You know, it's a fun idea. It's fun that
Yeah.
they're able to take the idea of, you know, the of Yojimbo and of Fistful of Dollars and translate it into a gangster movie between an
So
Irish
it's
and
a,
an
yeah,
Italian.
it's not a Western. It's a straight out.
No.
Oh, okay. So, and Bruce is the man with no name, or
Yes.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in the movie, his name is
Okay,
John Smith.
intriguing.
So that's
Oh,
essentially a man with no name.
okay. Yeah. So, did they ever do for a few dollars more, or I guess not?
Probably
Wow. Okay, well, this is like I said, every time I'm on your show, I learn something new, and now I've learned that they actually made Fistful of Dollars again.
not. But again, it
Wow.
goes back to the debate whether it's worth it to remake movies or not. And I generally say the answer is no. Every so often you do find
Yeah.
a remake that is slightly better than the original, but it rarely
Yeah,
happens.
Fred Gwynne said in Pet Sematary, sometimes dead is better. So just let it be. Leave it buried and yeah.
You can't argue with
And
Mr.
I won't be
Winster.
doing. Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been quite a week. I really appreciate you having me on, Rob. This has
Well,
been
I
a lot of
appreciate you
fun
having
and
time before you're about to, you know, do all your last minute checks before your new show debuts on Monday. So I appreciate the
Yes.
fact that you had time to do this with me at this point. So I thank you.
Always worth. Yeah, this good. It gears me up to be a better host like you are. So
Jim,
I will get there.
yeah, right. Jim, you're someone that I emulate. So there you go. With
Well,
your way of
you
talking.
are the king. You are the king of show prep. So I think I think we can learn from each other. That's what's good. Win-win.
Okay, excellent. All right, so Jim, would you like to one last time this week tell people where they can find you?
Yes, Monday morning, bright and early, you get up and go look for Captain America Minute podcast. We're going to be starting December 1st. And we are going to be running 3 days a week for a long time until the movie's over. And we've got some really great guests. You can find us out at capminute.com, capminute.com. And we're going over the Joe Johnston feature, Captain America: The First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode, like most Movies by Minutes podcasts. So join us there Monday. So hopefully you'll come out and see us. We're also out there on Spotify and iTunes and wherever you're finding Rob's podcast, you'll probably find ours alongside. So just check us out, Captain America Minute.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So, Jim, thank you very much once again for joining me this week. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of their Thanksgiving weekend. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, achoo!
Oh, gesundheit!